Hello, this is Linda Orne from the Triangle Radio Reading Service, sitting in for Bob Krueger. For the next 30 minutes, I will share with you some articles for our Thought for Food program. This program is intended for blind and print-impaired audience. Well, here we go with some Thought for Food that Bob has put together for us for the month of February 2011. The month of February holds some important dates for me. That's Bob speaking, of course. His dad was born on February 17th of 1890, and he retired from his wage-paying job on February 1st, 1985. During this month, two of our most noted presidents were born. Abraham Lincoln, our 16th president, was born on the 12th, and George Washington, our first president, was born on the 22nd. We celebrate Groundhog Day on the 2nd and President's Day on the 21st. Don't forget Valentine's Day. So far this year, it seems that we have more days that are below the average temperatures for this time of year. This presents a problem. How do we plan, prepare, and serve meals that make us feel warmer and at the same time are healthful? Almost every publication one glances at seems to have a story or article on ways we might answer this question. An article titled Simple Secrets for a Longer Life in the January-February issue of AARP magazine should be of interest to those of us with a few years behind us. It begins, "Have you ever eaten dessert after a massive entree, even though you were stuffed? Ever helped yourself to that last bit of room temperature casserole because you didn't want to throw it out? Ever robotically eaten your way through a bag of fast food fries, even though they were soggy and cold? We've all eaten food for us that's bad for us simply because it's there and we didn't want to waste it. As a result, many of us eat too much fat and not enough fruits and vegetables for good health. The typical American diet is largely responsible for rising rates of hypertension, high blood pressure, heart disease, and type 2 diabetes among 50 and older Americans. The older we get, the more important it is to eat well." Why is that? The latest research shows one of the best ways to stay energetic, strong, and disease-free at 70 and older is to eat more of the good stuff and less of the bad. But why don't we always choose healthy fare and eat it in moderation? The answer is less complicated than you might think and has as much to do with how we eat as it does with what we eat. Every day we make more than 200 decisions about food, often without much conscious thought. Is it noon? Must be time for lunch. Are there any leftovers from last night's takeout in the fridge? Then I should probably finish them off. These external clues in our environment, the clock, the leftovers, sabotage our eating habits in ways we do not fully realize. The problem is relying on external cues is that almost all of them, including the visibility and convenience of food, nudge us to eat items that don't promote longevity. By changing our environment and some of our habits, we can trick ourselves into eating better without really thinking about it. The best news? Eating well can be easy, fun, and delicious. We think we are the master and commander of what goes in our mouths, but we aren't. We are tremendously influenced by what's around us, including how we store and serve our food. Think about where you keep your snacks. In one study, office workers were given all of the chocolate kisses they could eat for a month. Then the candy dishes were put on the workers' desks or 6 feet away. Those who had candy on their desks ate twice the amount of those who had to move 6 feet away. Something similar happened with bowls of carrots. People ate 35% more carrots when they were kept close to hand. Use big plates for food if you want to eat more of, like salads, and smaller plates for pasta, meatloaf, and casseroles you want to eat sparingly. Use wide glasses of water and thin glasses for alcoholic or less healthy beverages. Keep your serving dishes on the stove rather than on the table. You will be less inclined to go for seconds. Changing your environment can go a long way toward helping us eat better, but unless we change our eating habits too, we probably won't be celebrating our centennial birthday. Not every suggestion you try will work. Some of these ideas sound great, but might end up being impractical. Others might sound crazy, but would be surprisingly helpful if you try them. Here are three such suggestions. Keep at least three small, single-serving food storage bags of pre-cut vegetables or fruit on the middle shelf of the refrigerator, making them them easy to grab when you're hungry. Use the half plate rule, filling half of one's plate with vegetables or salad. Add a can of rinsed vegetables to canned soup on evenings when you're tempted to skip supper. These are three easy changes I'm going to try. Mindless eating better involves both your environment and your habits. Remove unwanted eating cues and changing your eating habits so that they work for you rather than against you. Before long, your cholesterol numbers will go down, your blood pressure will start coming under control, and your spirits and energy will go up. Of course, the real secret to this healthy eating plan is that you won't have changed much at all, but you'll reap the rewards for years to come. So how's the New Year's resolutions working out? Need a little help sticking to your pledge to eat healthier this year? Me too. Here are a couple of new options that might be of help. Whole Foods Markets has just revamped its hot and cold foods bar with a new program called Health Starts Here. Featured foods made with no added salt, sugar, oils, or fats. The daily changing selection includes the likes of spicy lentil chili, mango edamame salads, beans and greens ragu, and salmon with green lentils and apples. The Chapel Hill store has dedicated an entire food bar to the concept, fittingly replacing the dessert bar, while other locations have incorporated Health Starts Here dishes into existing hot and cold bars. Look for the green and purple logo. The program's ambitious goal is to improve America's overall health, fight chronic disease, and increase longevity. If it helps us drop a few pounds in the process, that's just icing on the cake. We need all the help we can get. With the cold winter we've experienced so far this year, we reach for something warm. At the same time, we know we should drink a certain amount of liquids every day, so we often reach for hot drinks. Nothing wrong with that. But remember that what you drink can have a big impact on your overall diet. As you sip, consider the quality and caloric content of whatever is in your cup. Of course, there is the potential for that hot drink to do you some good. Beverages hydrate, and they can be a source of valuable nutrients. Depending on what you choose, your drink may be rich in protein, vitamins, minerals, and even dietary fiber. But drinks can also be loaded with added sugar and sodium. Coffee drinks and hot tea made with flavored syrups, hot chocolate, and salty bouillon or broth are a few examples. They can also add substantially to your calorie load. Liquids slide down your throat or wash down your food with ease. It's so easy, in fact, that you may add hundreds of calories to your diet without realizing you've drunk the energy equivalent of an entire meal. Research suggests that the mind tends to overlook the calories you drink. If you get 300 calories from a mug of hot chocolate, you aren't likely to compensate by eating one less sandwich. If you are watching your weight, aim for keeping as low as possible the calories in what you drink. When you reach for a hot drink, it might help to keep these ideas in mind. Make calorie-free your first choice. Hot coffee, tea, clear broth are good examples. Drink coffee and tea black, but a splash of milk for whitening or a spoonful of sugar for sweetening is nothing to fret about. An ounce of low-fat milk or 1 teaspoon of sugar, make that a level teaspoonful, adds fewer than 20 calories. When you reach for bouillon or broth-based soups, compare labels. Choose the one with the lowest amount of sodium. Fruit juice is high in calories. 1 half cup of apple cider contains 60 calories. 1 cup of juice contains as much energy as a can of soda. Mulled cider tastes great, but be mindful of how many times you refill your cup. Serving it piping hot, you'll drink it more slowly, and a serving will last longer. Warm milk has fewer calories than hot chocolate. Use skim or drink soy milk, rice milk, or almond milk instead. Add a dash of cardamom or cinnamon. They're calorie-free and add a wonderful aroma in addition to flavor. Replace dessert with a warm drink. A cup of cappuccino or hot cider is a nice way to end a winter meal for a fraction of the calories you may otherwise eat. But watch out for after-dinner cocktails. An ounce of whiskey, vodka, coffee liqueur, or Irish cream can add from 60 to 100 calories. We often have a cup of a special blend of coffee, Highland Grog, in the evening instead of a dessert. It is a decaffeinated coffee. Another option for a hot drink that might be a mug of soup. Many varieties of soup are nutritious and relatively low in calories. Good examples include noodle soup, minestrone, miso soup, and tomato and rice soup. Heartier soups, lentil, navy bean, and split pea, for example, are rich in protein and dietary fiber. When it comes to wintertime warmers, you have options. Consider them carefully and enjoy them completely. This information about hot beverages is courtesy of Suzanne Havala Hobbs, who writes for the News and Observer. If the ice and snow we've seen this winter makes a person want to huddle over a bowl of soup, warm, comforting soup, and not leave the house until March, does this sound like you? That soup will be more delicious if it is made with homemade stock, a task that can daunt even the most experienced home cooks. Really, it is not that hard. If I can do it, anyone can. Save the bones from roast chickens and or turkeys you've served as main courses in the past. About every 3 months, put the bones in a soup pot of water, add a stalk of celery and a couple of carrots cut up and maybe a couple of bay leaves, and simmer until the meat is separated from the bones. Cool overnight in the refrigerator. The fat will come to the top and will be easy to remove. You won't need the fat. Then remove the bones. What is left is great homemade stock for your next adventures in soup baking. Put the stock in freezer containers and date. Always use the oldest first. When I make soup, I have two choices. Do I use our slow cooker or the regular soup pot? It's just a case of timing. If I'm going to be around and am in a hurry for the soup, I use the soup pot. If I have plenty of time and might be away for a while, the slow cooker is the answer. The great thing about soup making is that you put all into the mixture just about anything you wish. Some folks like a small type of pasta or dried beans of some sort. I like either pearl barley or wild rice in small amounts. The mainstays of most soups are potatoes, onions, carrots, and other vegetables. I like a small amount of okra, and some like tomatoes, while others do not. Soup is forgiving. If you are short an ingredient, find a substitute or do without. Soup is the kind of thing where you can improvise, use what you have, and don't worry. What better meal to serve on a wintry evening than a bowl of good homemade soup with some crusty bread, toasted, or just fresh from the oven? Yet last September, there was an article in the newspaper saying that sales of Campbell's soups had fallen. There are several theories as to why this has taken place. Soup ingredients have been hard hit by inflation, and soup is competing against macaroni and cheese and many frozen foods that weren't as attractively priced in past recessions. Campbell's soups are also facing tough competition from private label brand soups that have done well in taste tests. The chairman of the Heinz Corporation has said, "I don't know if we're seeing a move to homemade soup. We're trying to assess it." What is missing in a healthful diet when we depend on these warm comfort foods during cold winter? While we often ate meals built around a salad in summer days, has salad disappeared from our table during cold days? Why a salad at this time? Salads are made with ingredients that tend to be high in water content and dietary fiber and relatively low in calories. It goes without saying that counting calories is important in planning healthy meals. Fresh fruits and vegetable salads are also rich in nutrients, supplying us with the vitamins, minerals, and beneficial phytochemicals we need to support good health. But salads do disappear from our menus once cold weather begins. Why? One obvious reason is that the raw ingredients, the fruits and vegetables readily available locally, maybe in your own backyard, during warmer months are mostly out of season in the winter. Those fresh ingredients, so light and easy to digest, also lack the stick-to-your-ribs comfort factors you may crave when it's cold outside. The challenge, then, is how to increase the appeal and extend the benefits of fresh salad in your diet through this winter and into the coming spring. Here are some suggestions. Serve them warm. You may have served a chilled fruit salad when it was warm outside. Have you considered serving this type of salad warm? Turn cold pickled beets into Harvard-style beets. You probably have a recipe for Harvard beets in one of your favorite cookbooks. Make use of the fruits and vegetables that are available now. One can dress up a winter salad with a few raisins or dried cranberries. Most of us ate raisins as we were growing up. Have you any on hand now? Raisins are rich in nutrients, including iron. They also make a good between-meal snack. This time of year is a good time to make a bunch of bean salad. Make enough to last for several meals. A winter salad made with broccoli and cauliflower florets, mushrooms, and carrots tossed in Italian dressing might make a hit with your family. Cabbage seems to have a sweet ripeness at this time of year, and one can make a number of salads with cabbage as the base. Any winter salad is improved with some sort of ingredient that offers some crunch. I like to keep a couple cans of sliced water chestnuts in the pantry for such an occasion. A few chopped or slivered nuts adds crunch and flavor to any salad. Almonds are very good for this purpose. In an effort to get on the healthful eating bandwagon, Walmart has announced that it will start selling more healthful foods. The nation's largest grocer said it will reformulate thousands of store brand products to reduce sodium and sugar and push its suppliers to do the same. It also promises to reduce prices on produce and build stores in low-income areas that don't already have grocery stores. First Lady Michelle Obama said Walmart's plans have the potential to transform the marketplace and help Americans put healthier food on their tables every single day. She lent star power to Walmart executives as they announced the effort in Washington as a part of her campaign against obesity. A number of food makers have made similar moves, lowering sodium in their products based on shopper demand and increasing scrutiny by health groups. Bumblebee Foods, General Mills, Campbell's, PepsiCo, and Kraft Foods all announced sodium reductions to their products last year. Walmart's size, however, gives it unique power to shape what people eat. The grocery business of the nation's largest retailer accounts for about 15% of the industry in the U.S. and is nearly twice the size of number two competitor, Kroger. "This is a game changer," said Michael Hicks, associate professor of economics at Ball State University and author of a book on Walmart's economic impact. "If Walmart could reduce the prices on healthy food and provide access to them in more places, you could have a measurable effect on incidences of diabetes and heart-related ailments." About 20% of Walmart's food products are sold under its Great Value store brand, Hicks estimated. Making name brand products more healthful will require help from suppliers, but the company's influence over them is already clear. When Walmart pressed producers to use less packaging, for example, they responded. Now deodorant and toothpaste are sold without boxes. The whole industry shifted, and this will likely be the case for sodium and sugar, Hicks said. Robert Lawrence, a professor at the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins University, agreed that Walmart would wield great influence on nutrition, but is skeptical about how hard it will push. Is Walmart going to push Pepsi and Coca-Cola to make sugar-free drinks to replace the shelf after shelf of those that sell? Mr. Lawrence asked. Walmart said it plans to reduce sodium by a quarter and cut added sugars in some store-brand products by 2015. It also plans to remove remaining industrial-produced trans fats and develop a logo for products that meet its criteria for health. To start, the company plans to concentrate on products like lunch meats, fruit juices, and salad dressings that are high in sugar or sodium that consumers don't realize they are consuming. Besides the changes to its products, Walmart said it would reduce prices on fruits and vegetables by $1 billion a year by attempting to cut unnecessary costs from the supply chain. The company also said it would work to reduce prices on healthier items made with more expensive ingredients. "Our customers often ask us why whole wheat pasta sometimes costs more than regular pasta made by the same manufacturer," said Andrea Thomas, Walmart's Senior Vice President of Sustainability. Walmart officials acknowledged that it will take time for suppliers to reformulate some of the foods and to make sure they still taste good. Walmart said it plans to track its suppliers' improvements in making food more healthful, using the year 2008 as a baseline. Vendors that have already made some inroads will get credit for their work, but the objective is to meet the target reductions in what people are buying. Have you tasted North Carolina State's Howling Cow ice cream at the North Carolina State Fair? Are you aware that it is available on the ground floor of the D.H. Hill Library on the NCSU campus? For most of us, Howling Cow ice cream is a once-a-year treat at the state fair. Although scoops are available in the library and pints are sold in campus convenience store, most of it is eaten by students. NC State administrators soon hope to make it easier for more people to enjoy it with a new on-campus building that would feature a storefront ice cream parlor. The scoop shop will have enough room to seat 100 customers in its indoor and outdoor seating areas, along with plenty of nearby parking for off-campus customers. Ice cream almost has a surreal quality, said Gary D. Cartwright, director of the school's dairy enterprise system. It just makes people smile. Milk fat fans for decades have formed long lines outside the ice cream booth at the fair, a project that benefits the NC State Food Science Club. For nearly all of the time, the fair was the only place you could find it. With few exceptions, the state fair being one of them, a law prohibits state agencies from competing with private businesses. But people within the NC State Food Science Department asked the legislature for an exception, which was granted unanimously in 2005. The law allows the university to sell ice cream to the public on campus and led plans for a $4 million annex to Schaub Hall, which would include the ice cream parlor. Ground could be broken in 10 to 12 months. NC State controls each aspect of its ice cream operations. Most of the cream comes from the 150 or so milk cows on the university's farm off Lake Wheeler Road, with cows from the vet school contributing as well. In addition to ice cream, the school processes milk for use in on-campus dining halls, prisons, and other state institutions. The facility in Schaub Hall, a block off Western Boulevard on the main campus, processes about 400,000 gallons of milk each year, about as much as the Mayola Creamery in Newbern produces in 4 days, and is responsible for approximately $1.7 million in revenue. Everything we make is plowed back into our operations, said Cartwright. The university began branding the ice cream and milk as Howling Cow in 2009 as a way to increase its recognition with students as well as the general public. Cartwright and Carl Hollifield, the Dairy Enterprise System's assistant director, came up with the name. Although the ice cream has plenty of fans, 3,000 gallons or so are sold each year at the fair, not everyone is happy about the school's plans to expand its ice cream reach. John Lensmere and his wife Linda opened a Freshberry frozen yogurt cafe on Hillsborough Street across from the Hill Library in October. The couple were not aware of the planned ice cream parlor. If they want Hillsborough Street to come alive, they don't need to be in competition with us, John said. I'm definitely not in favor of it. The university has built-in advantages when it comes to starting the business, he said, noting that NC State won't have to worry about buying or leasing a site. The annex will cost about $4 million, of which $1 million has been raised so far, Cartwright said. Organizers hope to add an additional $1.75 million through naming rights for various components of the project. Plans call for the construction to take place without taxpayer money, he said. The ice cream parlor will occupy only part of the new building. The annex also will have rooms that can be used to provide training for people who work in the industry. Video monitors inside the ice cream parlor will show how the ice cream is made, and literature will be available so customers may read more about the operations and products. The purpose is not to sell ice cream, Cartwright said. The purpose is to provide education. Another way we are educated is to listen to experts when they talk about things in their field. Kathleen Purvis is the food editor of the Charlotte Observer. She answers many questions for her readers and others who write in. Here is an example. Question. I have some semi-sweet chocolate squares that have turned white. Can I still use them? Answer. The white haze is called bloom. It is caused by cocoa butter rising to the surface, and it happens to chocolate when it is stored in a place that is too warm. Chocolate is like Goldilocks. It likes to be just right, not too warm and not too cold. Storing it in the refrigerator isn't a great idea because it can get damp, which can make it grainy. The best place to keep it is a dark cabinet that stays cool, 60 to 70 degrees. In most kitchens, that means the cabinet that is farthest from the stove. It also picks up other flavors easily, so make sure it is well wrapped. The good news is that bloom doesn't mean you can't use the chocolate. It will disappear when you melt it into a recipe, but it is a good idea to taste a little bit to be sure it hasn't picked up an off flavor. This question will be of interest to those of you who bake. Is there a difference between icing and frosting? The answer, how sweet of you to ask. Technically, there doesn't appear to be a difference. It's a matter of habit and preference, like that between stuffing and dressing. Some sources claim it's regional, with New England, the upper Midwest, and the West using frosting, and the lower Middle West and the South using icing. In practice, though, it might be clearer to use icing to describe a sugar-based topping that is thinner, and frosting to describe something thicker and fluffier. Also, frosting holds its shape for piping decorations, while icing generally dries to a smoother, shinier finish. In searching online for a definitive decision, I found a great comment that claimed it depends on what you are doing. You ice with frosting, and you frost with icing. That's certainly semantically convenient. Once we get past that debate, we should consider glaze. I think it's a glaze if you can pour it or brush it. Question. I have an old recipe for a cream pie. Milk, sugar, and salt are cooked in a double boiler, then gelatin is dissolved in water is added along with egg yolks. After this has cooled, beaten egg whites and cream are added, and the mixture is put into a pie crust and chilled. Every time I make this, it separates. Any suggestions on what I might be doing to cause this? Answer. I wasn't familiar with this type of pie, so I turned to cookbook author and baking science expert Jean Anderson. Her suggestion is that the baker may be overbeating the egg whites. Overbeating will cause the egg whites to break down and weep or exude moisture. Beating egg whites without sugar may also be part of the problem, she says. It would help if she added about 2 tablespoons of powdered sugar and beat only until the egg whites are soft and billowing, not to stiff peaks. The cornstarch in the powdered sugar will help stabilize the meringue. Anderson also brought up another issue that occurs often with older recipes, using raw eggs in an unbaked pie. In this age of salmonella, I wouldn't recommend putting raw egg whites in a cream pie, she said. The fastest solution for her would be to use just whites, or meringue powder, or pasteurized eggs. That would stop the weeping and also eliminate the risk of salmonella food poisoning. Well, as you all are probably aware, Saturday, February the 5th, was the 7th running of the Krispy Kreme race. That's where students, to raise money for the American Heart Association, paid their fee and ran the 2 miles from the NC State Bell Tower to the Krispy Kreme donut shop on Hillsborough Street, or Person Street, rather, and ate a dozen Krispy Kreme donuts, then turned around and ran all the way back to the bell tower. The goal, the winner, is the person who got all the way back to the bell tower and did not lose the Krispy Kreme donuts on the way. I understand that the fellow who won made the race in about 36 minutes. That seems awfully, awfully fast to me. But anyway, that is what went on in downtown Raleigh on a Saturday the 5th. If you were out there, you know it was a rainy, cold day. And apparently some of the 7,500 people didn't show up. There were only about 5,000 runners. But that was definitely enough. Well, this is Linda Orndt from the Triangle Radio Reading Service, sitting in for Bob Krueger. I hope that you've enjoyed it. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. So long until next time.